League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Terry Filppula. Garrison, a heavy shot caught by Mrazek.
But in this particular instance, Peter Mrazek is able to come up with a big glove save through some traffic. He's able to find that puck.
Darren Helm moves in. Shut down again by Bishop.
Ben Bishop has been outstanding, Brian.
He really has.
Brought out by Ryan Callahan off the boards, all the way back down. Mrazek, a soft clear. Callahan in front. They score! Green, a shot off a body going down. Callahan, hook, Bishop, that'll do it. Tampa Bay marches on.
Well, extremely frustrating. I thought our guys played really well. Couldn't find a way to find the back of the net, obviously. I thought, I said at the beginning of the year, I spoke highly of the character of the group that we have. And I think you find out a lot about your character when you're in situations like this, down 3-1 on the road. And I just thought we kept coming and coming and coming and coming. It just speaks to the character of not only the leadership of the whole room. Certainly played good enough to win. Unfortunately, we didn't.
Yeah, it's always hard when you lose a game like that. You know, you've got a minute and a half left in the game. And this kind of goal, it's kind of frustrating. But, you know, we had lots of chances today to finish it earlier.
Here comes a 2-2. In the air, this should do it. Jason Hayward makes a catch. It's a no-hitter. Jake Arrieta has done it again.
Wow. That was fun.
His second no-hitter in his last 11 regular season starts. I'd say the sky's the limit.
We're playing at home tomorrow, so gotta try to pick one up and try to move on from there. You know, we took the first two losses in Cleveland, but we gotta try to take one at home.
I think it'll be great to be home in front of our fans, and I think the energy in the building will be good, and I think that'll help us. With that said, I mean, we've got to play the game better than we have in these first two games, and there's some very basic things that our players have to do better, and, you know, I've got to try to find some answers to some of the other things that I haven't been able to yet.
We have shooters. They are designated snipers, and that's what we got them for, and I'm not one of them. I'm more like a tank or something like that.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh my goodness, what a montage put together there by Mr. Cushlin. The Wings season coming to a close. You got the coach, you got the goalie, you got the no-hitter, the first no-hitter of the MLB season by Mr. Arrieta in Chicago. You got the Andre Drummond and Stan Van commentary, followed by Tyronn Lue and LeBron James, the tank of the Cleveland Cavaliers attack, all in one montage. Well done, Mr. Cushlin. Very well done.
I think some
congratulations and some applause are in order. Yes.
Sweet.
And that pretty much covers it. Have a nice day. We'll see you on Monday. Just end the show. There it is. You got all of the updates that you need. Welcome to the Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. A little free-for-all Friday coming your way right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo Sports Leader, and we invite you to be a part of our chat this afternoon on anything that is on your mind in the world of sports. If you do want to talk hockey, Cushlin is the expert on hockey, by the way, not so much here with me. But if you want to get in on the Wings, the end of their season, if you do want to talk about baseball, if you do want to talk about tonight's Game 3 between the Cavs and Pistons, it's all there for you. Last night's upset by the Houston Rockets of the Curry-less Golden State Warriors kind of really makes things a little interesting out there, especially since we don't really know how injured Steph Curry is and whether he'll be able to return for Game 4 in that series. So kind of a little interesting drama out there. But many other things to get into today right here, so we want to invite you at 866-240-1065 to get on the line and join us, 866-240-1065. Also, don't forget that we want your social media contributions to the show as well. We're trying to merge and meld together, if you will, our on-air and our online products for you, so make sure you follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5 and on Facebook at 106.5 The Ticket. Make sure that you follow and like those pages respectively so that you can be heard. All right, Jim Cushlin, before we get into basketball, before we get into NFL draft talk, before a mock draft, another one predicts that the Browns are not done moving. They're going to move down again, possibly in a little shift with the Miami Dolphins, who may have their eyes on Ezekiel Elliott at the number 8 overall selection. So I'm going to share a little bit of that with you coming up on the program. Guest-wise today, Kush, we got Rick Noland is going to talk to us with a preview of Game 3 between the Cavaliers and the Pistons. From his point of view, he is on his way to Detroit from Cleveland as we speak, or he will be as we are speaking at 3:35. So we're definitely looking forward to that. And then at 4:05, we are going to talk a little bit more about the NFL, and not just about the proposed or suggested or possible other deal involving the Browns and their draft picks, but specifically the one that's already gone. We talk about it from the Cleveland perspective all the time, trying to figure out if they did the right thing or not, Kush. Now we're going to see what the Eagles were thinking. Brandon Gowden, manager and editor-in-chief of BleedingGreenNation.com, which is SB Nation, will be joining us at 4:05 to see what they're thinking in Philly of the deal to get one pick at number 2 in exchange for many picks that they gave away to the Cleveland Browns. Before we go into all of that, Kush, though, why don't you give us our hockey fix and give us the postmortem on the Red Wings season?
Well, it's the third time.
Series first, I guess, and then season.
Yeah, series first, third series, first round series in a row that the Red Wings have now fallen in 3 straight years. It was a 1-0 game. Went 0-4 again yesterday on the power play, so that means the Wings, if I'm doing this math right, 1 of 25 on the power play in the series. When you have the man advantage, you got to be able to score some goals. We knew this was probably an issue with the Detroit Red Wings, but they just weren't able to get enough. And then the big mistake, despite how decent, and let make no mistake about it, Jimmy Howard was in net for the first 2 games. Then Coach Jeff Blashill made the change, went to the youngster Peter Mrazek, who not too terribly long ago was in net at the Huntington Center for the Toledo Walleye,
right.
Especially late last season. And he made a very young mistake that very, very late in that game when the only goal came down, cleared into the Red Wings zone, goes behind the net. You see often the goalie goes out and get it. That situation, though, that Mrazek should have just stayed put. He went out and got it, and that's all the little opening Tampa needed. They end up getting the one goal. And that pretty much, all she wrote. Red Wings were not able to do enough on the power play, as I mentioned. And it'll be interesting to see. They were already asking him post-game, Pavel Datsyuk, probably one of the better veteran scorers the Wings still have left, who a little while ago was said, after I'm done with this season, I'm going back to Russia. It's been fun here in Detroit and everywhere, but I'm going back to finish off any hockey I want to play in home country. So they're probably going to lose him in this offseason. And despite the fact that they made the playoffs again, Bob, a 25th consecutive year, which is still astounding, and by a wide margin.
That's phenomenal. Think about that for just a moment. I don't care whether it's hockey or basketball,
sure,
or football or anything else. 25 straight years of qualifying for the postseason. I don't care who you are or what sport it is. That's an amazing feat.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. But at the same time, last 3 years have ended in first round exits. In the last 2 years now to Tampa. Last year was a close back and forth 7 game series. This one only goes 5. You do have some youngsters that they're moving in, but they still feel a little bit in a transition period. I don't expect them to suddenly be one of the worst teams in the NHL starting next year, or even suggest that they're going to miss the playoffs. They could very well make it 26, but they feel in a bit of a transition. They're not, certainly not terrible, but they're no longer right now one of the top echelon teams, right, in the NHL.
Yeah, and that's a hard place to be if you're a fan. Again,
yes.
I don't care what sport it is. If you have been an elite team and you go into a slide where you're not rebuilding, you're not like, hey, we get top draft picks and a bunch of great opportunities to build this thing up again, you're just kind of caught in the middle.
Yep.
You're barely making the playoffs, perhaps. You're a first-round exit on a regular basis, like you said, for the last 3 seasons. It's very hard because you're almost like, all right, we don't need a complete overhaul. We don't need a ton of new talent and a ton of changes, but we're also not there yet. We're in that limbo, that you know, almost like that purgatory. You know, we're not in heaven, we're not in hell, we're just in purgatory.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, the only thing that even, you know, feels like it comes close because it's a different sport is what we say about NBA teams. You either need to be really good, i.e. Cavs, Spurs, Warriors type position, or you need to be really, really bad, like the process, except actually doing something, of course. It's that, we're right around 500 and we're getting blown out in round one. That's the no man's land in the NBA. It's a little different, you know, obviously in hockey, and the Red Wings have been known over the years for being able to get bigger name, bigger priced veterans to come in here and round out the team. But really these last couple years and definitely going forward, this is going to be more of a team that focuses on some of the youth. Some of the youth that comes through Toledo and then Grand Rapids before it gets to Detroit. And some of these guys are going to have to produce. We saw some of it at times. Peter Mrazek at the end of the day is one of the future goalies of this team. So there's still pieces to work with. But it's really hard for me to think that next year the Red Wings are going to be a top three seed and a Stanley Cup finals appearance contender. I don't really see that happening, but I don't see 20 points out in the playoffs, kind of like we're in the Columbus Blue Jackets type of position. I don't see that either. Right. At this rate, I see, barring massive injury, which is the case, obviously, for anybody, I see them kind of, unless major changes are made, I still see a similar kind of season next year to this one.
All right, so there's a little bit of a Red Wings fix. If you want to talk about it, we'll take calls on it, too, just about how, you know, what that feels like if you're a big diehard hockey fan and a Wings fan. We'll take you at 866-240-1065. Again, we like to call Fridays on this show Free for All Friday because we'll talk about anything, any sport, any team or any game or any series or any issue or whatever the case might be.
And by the way, Bob, with that in mind, one last notation on hockey, you know, because I know a lot won't pay attention going forward because there's always that angle of, you know, if your team's not in it, you're less inclined, kind of that kind of deal. What I find amazing about the right now playoffs in hockey. Do you know this is the first time in like 30 years, maybe 40, I got to double check the year again, that there are zero Canadian teams in the playoffs. Forget the fact the Canadian team hasn't won a cup since 1993. There's zero Canadian teams in the playoffs at all. And I know we're here in the U.S., but you know, Canada hockey has its Canada connotation to it.
Connotation? But, it's their life.
Yeah.
It's their national sport.
And I argued. I had a sub for Mike Miller on Face Off the Hockey Show a couple weeks ago, right as the playoffs were about to start, and I noticed that it was really the first time all season that I really, you know, put two and two together, thinking, "Wow, you mean to tell me there's going to be zero Canadian teams in the playoffs? That's kind of a bad thing, honestly."
What was the dispute with Miller over?
Oh, no. I just had to sub in for him one day. And so I was thinking of all things hockey. I finally came across that. I hadn't even noticed that throughout the year. And I'm like, looking at all the standings and everything as we were approaching playoffs, it was the last week of the regular season, so a couple weeks ago. And I'm thinking, wow, wait, you mean to tell me there's no Canadian teams that are going to be in the playoffs at all? That doesn't sound right.
I wonder if they're just, like, ready to cut their wrists up there. I mean, seriously. You know, hockey is religion in Canada. It's religion. And of course, by the way, I'm not making light of suicide. I don't want anybody giving me any complaints. Shut up. It's a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech. But I seriously wonder how upset they are up there. I mean, it is religion up in Canada. I mean, I remember when they beat us in, was it the Olympics?
Thinking that Olympics a couple of years ago with the overtime gold medal game. Great game.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they, you know, first of all, there's the general, you know, genuine rivalry maybe a little bit among some Canadians with America because, you know, they consider themselves to be superior, but yet we are the quote unquote world power. And we look at them as little more than America's hat, you know, sitting up there.
Whatever. Just, they usually on the hockey ice get vengeance there.
Yeah, you know, or sometimes I hear them referred to as America's attic. It's where we store all the old stuff we forget's up there. And it's just where we keep things. We forget they're up there. And once in a while, we'll go up and look around and say, oh, that's kind of neat. And then we come back down to the main level of the house and we forget about it again. That's just Canada to us for the most part. So the fact that Americans have taken over their sport in the NHL. Maybe not on the international level, as you point out, you know, when they beat us in hockey and international competitions, but in general in the NHL, which is, you know, the most highly competitive league in the world, they're not part of it anymore. They're not part of the playoff runs anymore or the contending for a championship part anymore, and I just wonder what that's like for them. It would be like, you know, I guess the best comparison would be baseball for us, because we can't say football because nobody else plays football.
Right.
You know, the Canadian League is just, it's like a, it's a,
it is what it is.
It's a brand of football, I guess. It's its own entity.
Sure. That's a good way.
The NFL Europe is not around anymore. Nobody else plays football. It's just us. But baseball is worldwide. Baseball is Japan. It's in Taiwan. It's in China. And it's in the Dominican. It's everywhere. There's professional leagues pretty much everywhere. And this is the biggest. And it's the best. And it's ours. It was invented here. It's Abner Doubleday. It's our sport. It's our national pastime, as you know, if you will. It would kind of be like if in our league we expanded more worldwide, and which of course they are more than willing to do. And suddenly, you know, the playoff teams were all comprised of three from Canada and two from Mexico and, you know, and two from wherever. And, you know, there's no American teams in the Major League Baseball playoffs. No playoff. Think about it, Jim. No playoffs in, under the lights. Fox television or ESPN television or TBS, you know, whoever's doing baseball's playoffs that year. No Bob Costas sitting at Yankee Stadium or at Comerica or at Chavez Ravine or wherever. But coming to you live from Quebec, coming to you live from, I don't know, Mexico City, coming to you live from somewhere in the Dominican. Can't even name a city. But imagine what it would be like for us. This used to be our sport. We used to own it. And ever since we went worldwide, the best franchises are elsewhere now, and it's not our sport anymore. That's what it's got to feel like for Canadians.
It must. I don't pretend to know that, but it's just something so startling because, again, as I said, it's one thing to have the conversation, which has come up every Stanley Cup playoff since 1993, about how that was the last time a Canadian team won the Cup. But to me, this is on a different level, that there's zero.
They're not even in.
Not even in the playoffs. That to me is, you know, a different level, and I'm trying to scan through and trying to figure out once again which year it was, and I found it. The last year there were no Canadian teams in the playoffs was 69-70. For perspective, Bob, there were only two divisions with 12 teams total then, and there were only two in Canada, Montreal and the Canadiens and the Maple Leafs. But that was the last year zero Canadian teams entered the made the playoffs. That's astonishing.
Yeah, it really, really is. We can take some calls on this. Again, it is an open lines Friday, a free-for-all Friday. So anything you want to talk about, again, is 866-240-1065. Then we got a lot of other stuff to get into. And by the way, did you realize, Jim, you know, we've been following Detroit and Cleveland in the NBA playoffs.
Of course.
Of course, Tigers and Indians have to get after it, too, at the same time. Just an FYI.
All in Detroit, but it's a big, heavy Cleveland v. Detroit weekend. All the games will be in Detroit, though.
8-6 Tigers, 6-7 Indians tonight, by the way. We'll have a little preview of that, too, in addition to the Pistons and the Cavaliers. All right, let's go to Jamie in Sylvania. Wants to talk a little hockey or a little bit about the American dominance of the Canadian pastime right here on the ticket. Hey, Jamie, what's up, man?
Yeah, hey, you guys are talking about that, but as a lifelong hockey player, I know that the Canadians feel like the majority of the rosters here in the States are all made up of Canadian players. So even though their teams aren't in it and they don't have any rooting teams, they're rooting for a lot of the players that are playing on these teams in America.
And while that is true.
That is interesting, but I would say, you know, like I said before, you don't get any games, though. You know what I mean? You don't get playoff hockey in Montreal, you don't get playoff hockey in Toronto, you don't get playoff hockey anywhere in Canada. That's got to be, you know, hey, there's a Canadian guy on the, you know, the Capitals, there's a Canadian guy on the Rangers, or a Canadian guy on the Ducks, a Canadian guy on the Wings or whatever. So there's Canadian guys everywhere. So what do you, you know, how do you find anybody to root for?
Well, you know, you're, like I said, you're rooting for a lot of players. You got to think Canada is so spread out. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
And so you think about the number of teams that are, you know, even in Canada, they're so spread out that most of these guys are just watching them on TV anyway. So, as far as where they're coming from, you know, it's still their game, and their players are still the ones making up, probably 70% of all the NHL teams in the States too.
And that may very well be true, and I'm not arguing that, Jamie. Of course, you know, of course those kind of percentages of players spread around the league is true. What I'm wondering, and this is what I argued when I first discovered this, subbing in for Mike Miller a couple weeks ago on Face Off the Hockey Show, was Is that a bad thing, though, for the NHL and hockey in general, that there's zero Canadian teams represented? Because I kind of lean towards it. Kind of is.
I do too. That's kind of one of the reasons I brought it up.
I would absolutely agree with that. I would think that's something that Gary Bettman probably seething about right now. That the fact that they don't have any Canadian teams up there, is probably something that's definitely stuck in their craw as well. Because it is the origin of the game. Like you said, baseball not being played in the States, and all the NBA or all the Major League Baseball playoffs would be in another country. It would be insane.
And for some reason, I don't see American fans being pacified by, but all of those guys down there playing for the Mexico City team that is in the playoffs or in the league championship series right now, there's a lot of them who are American, so go Mexico City. I don't think they'd be pacified. They'd just be ticked off that there's not playoff baseball being played here in the States or in their particular city.
I agree with that. I would go back to the point that I made earlier that per capita-wise, the teams in the States are more densely populated as to where Canada is, and everything's so spread out, and the fan bases are so spread out up there that most of the time they can only watch their favorite teams on TV anyway. So
yeah, I understood.
But
where did
you
play
that.
Hockey? You said you're a former player.
I played here in Toledo. I played at St. Francis back in the late '80s, and won a national championship with Team Toledo.
Outstanding. That is great to hear. Well, thanks for contributing, man. We really appreciate it. Great points that you made. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Jamie in Sylvania, a former hockey player, obviously. And I guess he's got a point. Like I said, Canada takes pride in the fact that, they're, Canadian players make up. And by the way, you think that's accurate, Jim? 70% of the rosters?
I don't think it's that high, but it's definitely a way higher percentage than American-born players. That is still true.
Sure, but I'm thinking more of the European influx now, because
particularly of the Russian. Yeah,
exactly. Now back when the Soviet bloc still existed and they weren't allowed to come over here, I would certainly think it probably would have been the vast majority of Canadian players followed by Americans.
Yes, in those types of times it was.
But once the Iron Curtain came down, if you will, and the Russian players were allowed to come over, all the Eastern European players that are in the NHL right now, I doubt it's as high as 70%. I mean, yeah, it's still a good percentage of Canadian players, obviously spread out on all the American teams as well, but I got to think that it's not that high. Just given the world reach of the game now.
Right.
All right. Good conversation. We're going to take a timeout. On the other side of the timeout, we're going to talk a little basketball. As I mentioned, we're going to talk with Rick Noland, who's going to give us a preview of the Pistons hosting the Cavaliers at the Palace. It's a Cleveland-Detroit thing today because the Indians are also at Comerica, although that one might be in doubt. I don't know where we are rain-wise or what it's looking like up there. It's been overcast and kind of spitting around a little bit all over the area today, all over northern Ohio today. We'll see what it's like up there at Comerica. But we do have a Cleveland at Detroit theme today. We'll get a little preview of the baseball side, too. But coming up, Cavaliers, Pistons, Stanley Johnson. Is he done running his mouth? Is he done flapping his gums about LeBron James? He said he's had to learn the hard way about what to do and what to say and what not to do and what not to say when playing LeBron James.
I just think at this point in time, right now, it's all about game three. What I said before really doesn't matter. It's in the past. We can control what we can control now. That's it. We just talked about the game plan. I said before, all we can control today is what we can go out and do.
He said he had some thoughts about just share them with you.
In case you can't hear it, the media is asking him about his conversations with Stan Van Gundy, the head coach. What did Stan say to you about keeping quiet about LeBron James and stop talking and so on? And he's trying to say, we just talked about game strategy, that's all. And the reporter's saying he had to say something more to you about it, right?
Yeah, Coach Van Gundy, he's an honest guy with me. He just wanted to make sure my head was in the right place, pretty much. And, a lot of people's job, like you guys take bits and pieces of what I said and put it front page. So you guys did a great job at that. I found out the hard way how that goes. So for us, I think for me especially, as I always was before now, I think it's all about game three.
I had to find out the hard way. Yes, indeed, he has, on the court and off. We'll get a preview of Game 3 coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I'm pretty satisfied, especially the second half of our games. I think we've really been doing that. Now we got to come out and try to do it in the first half. So I'm pretty satisfied where we're at right now.
I don't know who that was. Thank you. That's Tyronn Lue. I couldn't even tell just by the voice because I was sitting here over the last 3 or 4 minutes during the break listening to Stanley Johnson again explain to how's Coach Van Gundy feel about the way you've been running your mouth about LeBron James?
Yeah, Coach Van Gundy, you know, he's an honest guy with me. He just wanted to make sure my head was in the right place, pretty much. And, you know, a lot of people drive like you guys say bits and pieces of what I said and put it front page. So you guys did a great job at that. I found out the hard way how that goes. So for us, I think for me especially, as I always was before now, I think it's all about Game 3.
It's all about Game 3, indeed. Game 3 tonight at the Palace at Auburn Hills. Cavaliers and Pistons, Cavs up 2-0, and Stanley Johnson using the "I was taken out of context" defense. Although I don't even think he believed it very sincerely, because as I watch the video, which matches the audio I just played for you, he's kind of got a little half smile on his face, kind of like, yeah, I know I kind of stepped in it a little bit. Maybe I made a little mistake here. I found out the hard way.
That last part is about the only part that I know he's being honest with himself. I learned the hard way.
He learned the hard way two things, I think, thus far. He learned the hard way about running your mouth and getting you on your coach's bad side, because he started that out, of course, in response to what did Coach Stan Van Gundy say to you. So from the getting in trouble with your coach thing, and then he also learned the hard way about the impact of, quote, trying to get in LeBron James' head. You get in LeBron James' head, maybe he did. Maybe he did. Because LeBron James, we talked about this yesterday, was putting some extra glare after dunks against Stanley Johnson, staring at him, being extra physical, giving him that shoulder after the timeout or on the way into the benches during a timeout. You know, I think he was right. He did get in LeBron James' head, but not in a good way. Not in a way that would throw somebody off their game. All he did was make LeBron James angry. So he found out the hard way that poking the bear is not always the best way to go about your business in the NBA playoffs. Let's get a little preview of Game 3 now as we are joined by Cavaliers beat writer Rick Nolan, who should be on the road right now up toward Detroit getting ready for the action tonight at the Palace. Rick, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Bob. I'm actually sitting in the parking lot at the beautiful Palace of Auburn Hills, hoping the 207-mile drive back to Medina, Ohio, is a little less adventurous than the ride up here was.
Why?
If I don't see another orange barrel in my life, I'll be an unbelievably happy man. But I know that's coming up again here in about 8 hours.
A little bit of rain
in Detroit traffic. I don't know that there's ever a good time to go through downtown Detroit.
I don't know if most of the orange barrels were on the Ohio side of the state line or on the Michigan side of it, but you know that the orange barrel is the official flower in the spring of the state of Ohio, especially northern Ohio. So.
Bob, I paid $6.75 to go 90 miles on the Ohio Turnpike that was just littered with orange barrels over two 15-mile stretches. It was unbelievable.
Well, I know them very well, my friend, and I'm glad you made it safely, even if it wasn't necessarily the most comfortable cruise. But you made it safely, and that's the most important thing. All right, Rick, you heard a little bit of what we just played there from Stanley Johnson. Let's get this side story kind of out of the way and to bed. Well, at least I would imagine it's going to be now. You know, we talked earlier in the week, Jim and I did, and some other folks here, about Stanley Johnson's moxie, because he's shown some guts. He's shown that he's not in awe of LeBron James. He's not here as a 19-year-old rookie when he's matched up with him in the minutes that he's getting. He's not here just to kind of kiss the ring of the king. He's ready to play. He's ready to get physical. If you want to bring physicality to me, LeBron, let's do it. I'm not made of glass. And I liked it. I liked it a little less, though, after Game 2 when LeBron kind of torched him. He was 6-for-6 against Stanley Johnson. Was LeBron James, scored 27 points, and Johnson's claiming, "I'm in his head now." What are your thoughts on this little Stanley Johnson, LeBron James kind of back and forth?
Well, first let me say I think Stanley Johnson is going to be an outstanding player in this league. I I actually see some Kawhi Leonard similarities in his game. And then he plays, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Kawhi Leonard, but he's 19, and he's pretty good already. He plays unbelievably hard at both ends of the floor, and I love the way he competes and the way he thinks he's the best player when he's on the floor. As for his comments about LeBron, you know, LeBron is either, you know, letting those roll off his back, or what I think is it's just making him play even harder and wanting to prove a point even more. Probably not real smart on Mr. Johnson's part. I wrote in the paper today, it almost seems like Stanley Johnson is trying to convince himself that he can outplay LeBron. To say he's in somebody's head after the guy just went 7 of 9 while you were guarding him in the game two that you got beat pretty handily. That's just it's a little immaturity. It's a little bit unfamiliar with, you know, the NBA situation and how, you know, what you're telling 25 reporters in Detroit is going to end up, you know, with 2,500 reporters across the country, but he'll learn from it. You know, but like I said, I think he's going to be a really, really good, really good player. I've never seen a player get more run for averaging 9 points in two games than Stanley Johnson has.
Well, I got to tell you, you're 100% right. We talked about that also this week, too, that, you know, before this series, probably outside of Detroit and maybe, you know, a person or two in the division, nobody really knows about Stanley Johnson. Nobody's really paying attention to him. Nobody even really is aware of his existence. You know, he had several DNPs down the stretch for Detroit, too, in the last part of the season. So he's gotten more attention and more run in these two games than he has all year long. And, you know, if that's what he's looking for, is establishing a brand, and, you know, then he's definitely, it's definitely working. But let me ask this then as number point number two. Rick Nolan is our guest who covers the Cavaliers. He's at the Palace right now. He would not be the first guy to try to talk him up based on what you wrote, to talk himself into a mindset where I can do this, and maybe doing it publicly is how he gets himself up and believing that he can handle this challenge.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact year, but I think it was 06 or 07. Deshaun Stevenson tried the same thing when he was with the Washington Wizards, and that blew up in his face completely, the whole Soldier Boy, and then LeBron saying Jay-Z. And the difference is Deshaun Stevenson was pretty darn lousy in that series, actually. Stanley Johnson's actually played well, but, you know, he's a role player at this stage of his career, not a game changer or a star. And like I said, he'll learn. And like you said in the intro, don't poke a sleeping bear. Not that LeBron was sleeping, but don't wake him up angry and give him even more incentive than he already has. The guy's, you know, a great enough player as is. I would tend to try the kill him with kindness approach rather than you know, verbally challenge him.
You know, from a media standpoint, Rick, and Rick Nolan is our guest. Jim Kushlin is here as well. From a media standpoint, thank goodness for guys like you who write columns and report, and guys like me who have talk shows. I think, truthfully, it would be a rather boring series had it not been for this kind of side story. You agree?
Yeah, I've written about it twice already. Our columnist wrote about it once after game two. I've actually led my notebook with it again tonight. I'm getting tired of the story now.
but we got to find another one.
Unless Stanley goes off for 27 a night and the Pistons win, which I think if they're going to win a game, tonight's the one they're going to win. But, you know, it's reaching the point now almost, I think, of overkill. I personally am getting a little tired of it, although it did fill up some notebooks for a couple of days. You are 100% correct that, because there aren't a ton of other angles in this series other than the Cavs are better than the Pistons. And how do you say that and make it extremely interesting, you know, for the minimum of four games?
Right, and that's exactly right. Because, you know, the Cavs are the better team. They really, really started to expose that a little bit, if you will, because it wasn't as evident in game number one, but in game two, they really kind of started to pull away and kind of put on display how much better they are, how much more talent, how much more depth, whether it's inside or whether it's outside. And this is a 1-8, and this is kind of what a 1-8 is supposed to be. Now, having said that, based on the first two games that we've seen, one a lot closer than the Cavaliers would have liked, and one more of a blowout than the Pistons would have liked to see, are you still kind of in the Cavaliers in five mode, and that Detroit may take Game Three tonight, or do you think this is a probable sweep?
I'm still sticking with five. Something tells me I think the Pistons will come out gung-ho, focused, and playing their best basketball tonight. They played extremely well in Game One for all but a few short segments, and it cost them. So they know they can play with this team for pretty long stretches, but they have to be able to do it for 48 minutes. So I think tonight, a Friday night at home, first playoff game in what, 7 years here? Since 7 years.
Yeah, so, 7 years, right.
You know, if you're not up for this one, then, you know, it's a given. I think you're going on summer vacation late Sunday night after Game Four. But I think they might just slide by and get this one tonight in a real close one.
Hey, incidentally, since you're sitting there in the parking lot outside the Palace, did you say it is raining right now?
It is not. It's overcast, but at the moment, not raining in Auburn Hills.
I'm just wondering if the Indians and Tigers are going to play over Comerica.
I just heard on the radio intermittent rain, a chance of a shower, and I ran into a couple of hard ones on the way up that lasted literally a minute and a half, and then I either drove through them or they blew over. But it looks like they're going to. It'd be my weatherman guess.
I was just going to say meteorologist Rick Nolan with the report from Detroit on whether the Indians. It looks like it's a Cleveland Detroit night up there in the Motor City and close by, of course, at the Palace. So back to the action at hand here. Kevin Love had an outstanding shooting game in game number one, a little less so in game number two. He was 5 out of 14. And I think we all agreed that game one, when they combined for 81 points, was about as well as the big three can play, or certainly has played, together in the year and a half, or now, I guess, I don't know how we qualify last year, given all of the injuries, especially in the postseason to these guys. But in the two seasons that they've been together, you know, they haven't had the greatest chemistry all the time. They haven't all been on at the same time, and they really were on Monday a little less, or not Monday, excuse me, in game one, this past Sunday, a little less so in game two. So what do you expect in terms of those three guys and maybe the different way that Detroit will attack or approach their attack tonight in game three?
Well, I'm not saying that all the Cavs problems are cured. What I think is evident is this is a fantastic matchup for Kevin Love, because Detroit doesn't really have a power forward. They've been trying to defend him with Tobias Harris a lot, and he took big advantage of that in game one, not quite so much in game two. But what they have is the luxury of, they barely used Tristan Thompson or Timofey Mozgov in game two. I think they played 22 minutes combined. Mm-hmm. And they have played unbelievably well with using Kevin Love at center and just letting him stretch the floor and shoot threes, because Andre Drummond's just not used to moving that far away from the basket. And the Pistons catch 22 is they haven't really been able to take advantage of that at the other end. Number one, because they haven't done a very good job of getting Drummond the ball. And number two, because the Cavs always have the luxury of just tackling him when he does get it and send him to the foul line. So that's something Stan Van Gundy's got to work out. I think, Bob, I thought Van Gundy was the better coach in this series, but I question a little bit sometimes how he uses Andre Drummond. He played him virtually the entire first quarter in game one, and that gave the Cavs the opportunity to go to Hackett Drummond over the last 2.5 minutes, and it helped them cut a 10-point deficit to 5 by doing that. And then he sits him at the beginning of the second quarter when a team's not going to just start fouling because it doesn't want to get in the penalty with 9 minutes to go in the half. So I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if we want to talk real deep tactics, is maybe you take Drummond out of this game tonight at the 3-4 minute mark of the first period and bring him back at the start of the second period when you can really go to him and use the fouls he's going to draw to get you in the bonus early, rather than have them result in missed free throws later.
You know, looking at it, though, Rick, when it comes to Kevin Love and what the Cavs have used him at, especially in these small ball lineups the first two games, I'm still thinking that has to be one of the biggest things, that they have to find some kind of way, you know, to address. And there's not really a lot of personnel on the Pistons right now that can really do that in any way, shape, or form effectively. Aaron Baines, the former Spur, is on their bench as one of their big men. But, you know, for example, in that game, too, we know that they did hack a Drummond a bunch of times. But what I noticed, in addition to when Love was at the five, because they had to do that, Tristan Thompson barely played because he was in early foul trouble. And so he never got in any kind of rhythm in this one. So they went to that small ball lineup a little earlier. We know how it forces Drummond out of the paint. It opens up shooters, but it also means he's not there to gobble up all the rebounds. Drummond, who averaged 14 and a half, I think it was, to lead the NBA this year, he only had 7. They have to find some way, you know, to address that, because Kevin Love wasn't as effective as he was in game one, but he still had 16 and 10, and it helped open up some other things. Detroit, to me, it feels like they don't have any chance if they can't figure out something to try to slow down when the Cavs go in that small ball lineup with Kevin Love at the five.
I agree, but to throw a question back at you, what is Detroit going to do?
Well, that's the gag. It's mostly a personnel thing. They really can't. It's a pick your poison.
They don't have the... They can take their most dominant player off the floor, but that doesn't make them any better. So they've got to figure out a way to make Andre Drummond a scoring, rebounding machine at both ends of the floor. And I have to say that I don't know how they do that, given the different ways the Cavs can play them. And yeah, that's why I think this series, you know, isn't going more than 5 games, quite frankly, and it might only go 4.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, and I understand what Jim is saying, but you know, there are some teams that are just bad matchups for other teams. When one team makes an adjustment because they have the depth to be able to do something,
right, like
go small, go bigger, or go faster, slow it down, or try to crank up the pressure, or whatever it might be, and the other team is incapable. You know, and you could tell Stan Van Gundy kind of throwing his hands, Rick, up in the air a little bit. He said after game two something to the effect of, "Yeah, that's really great coaching over there. Put LeBron on the floor."
Right.
So you know, what am I going to do to that? How do I counter some of the things that I just don't have control over? He's got a lot better players than I've got over here.
I agree 100%. And the Pistons have not been horrible, you know, other than most of the third quarter in game two. They've actually been pretty darn impressive. I'll give them that. They're just not quite ready, and they don't have quite enough pieces to win a playoff series. And they might have fared a lot better against most of the other teams they would have played in the top half of the bracket. But unfortunately for them, Cleveland's kind of a worst-case scenario with the lineup they can throw out there.
That's a great point. And the last thing, and we'll wrap here, Rick, and we certainly appreciate the time, just getting outside of this series, what are you seeing in the East that surprises you, if anything at all, or do you see anything that concerns you? Because we're always looking ahead to the next series and potentially to the conference championship as, you know, the Cavs are expected to cruise through it and go back to the finals again. But anything that you're seeing, the Raptors seem to have found their groove a little bit again. Miami looks very, very focused. Dwayne Wade looks very, very, looks like he's 5 years younger, for crying out loud. But what are you seeing?
Yeah, it kind of went the way I thought it would, other than I'm a little surprised. You know, the wheels just kind of fell off a little bit for Boston. I thought that would be a great 7-game series, and now it looks like it might go 5.
After game one, I agree. Game one was terrific, and I thought, boy, these two teams are going to fight for a while. But,
they've lost two key. They've lost two key pieces now in Olenek and Avery Bradley, and they just don't have the star power, I think, to win in the playoffs. Miami looks phenomenal. The qualifier there is they're playing Charlotte. Toronto looks like Toronto has always looked in the playoffs in game one, but they've played two pretty good games now, and I think they're going to get through. So, I think it's going to go, you know, the way most people expected it to. The next round will be a little more interesting in the other semifinal. But I still just don't see anybody beating Cleveland on in the Eastern Conference. I just don't. Miami could be an entertaining series. I just think the Cavs have a little too much for them at this point as well.
Hard to make much of the Golden State loss last night because it was without Curry, but nonetheless, it was a loss. And Curry's ankle is still not being described as ready yet. I don't know, you know, if they'd rather have him play on it at 75 or 80% a little bit to make sure you don't get the series evened up at 2-2. How do you handle that, do you think, if you're Steve Kerr and if you're Steph Curry and any concerns there whatsoever?
Well, they vow he won't play until he's healthy. I think there's a lot better chance of him playing now that it's 2-1 than if it was 3-0. And I think if he doesn't play and it gets to 2-2, you can bet your last dollar he's going to be playing in game five. I don't think it's going to come to that. Bob, I think the most remarkable thing about Golden State is they played just pretty much an awful offensive game last night outside of Mo Spates of all people. Klay Thompson didn't make a three. I think Andre Drummond had seven turnovers. And, you know, yet there they were, with 30 seconds to go ahead by a point. And I think that's just a testament to just how good Golden State is and how much margin for error they actually have and are still able to win a playoff game. I actually, if I'm them, I take some positives out of that game, and I don't worry about the fact that they lost and didn't get a sweep. I still think they're just a phenomenally good team.
As great as they are, and it's still the favorite, of course, assuming Steph is fine and ready to go, the Spurs have looked terrific. Against an undermanned, yeah, injured, you know, Gasol and Conley, less Memphis team, but still, boy, they look good.
Very, very, very good. But, you know, they're getting basically a bye in the first round. Of all the teams they could have played, that was the perfect one for them. They just held on to get in the playoffs rather than, you know, made a push to get to them. And, you know, they're on their last legs with what they have left. They're going to be a nice, easy series for the Spurs. And, you know, at this stage of some of their players' careers, it's exactly what they needed.
All right. And the Thunder, of course, bounced back from their loss in Kevin Durant's nightmarish game number two. He was back in form, and they'll polish off Dallas sooner rather than later. It's a really interesting thing out west. Not so much here, because I think Cleveland, as you pointed out, is going to coast to it. But the West is going to be a lot more fun than people realize. Rick Noland, yep, is always fun to chat with. Sorry you had to deal with those barrels. You're going to see him again in a few hours. So, in the dark, no less. So,
when you hear somebody screaming at 3 a.m. on the highway, that's me. So
navigate them carefully, my friend, and thanks so much for the time.
Anytime.
All right, Rick. Rick Nolan joining us for a little preview of the Cavaliers and Pistons game number three at the Palace. It is Cleveland and Detroit facing off twice tonight. Cavaliers at Pistons, and yes, Indians at Tigers scheduled for Comerica. Weather allowing, of course. We'll see if we have an update on that. Maybe Jim can get us an update on that during the Sports Center and more coming up. We're going to shift gears after the top of the hour, by the way, because we've got another great conversation to have. Trades galore in the NFL, now less than a week away from the NFL draft. Do you realize that, Kush? The draft is a week from yesterday.
Oh, this time, 1 week from today, Bob, you and I will be talking about how the Browns screwed up the now number 8 pick, because the first round is next Thursday.
Well, there's a really interesting mock proposal that I saw today prepping for this show, which says they will not have a chance to screw up the number 8 because they're going to move back yet again and still may find a quarterback in the first round. How? We'll talk about it, but the other thing we will talk about is whether or not they should have moved out of the number 2 spot at all, with the potential franchise quarterback, Goff or Wentz, being there for them.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.